From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
And I tell you what, the weather is absolutely glorious here in Salford. I'm sure it's the same wherever you are in the UK. For those of you in the UK, welcome to Wednesday's programme. Two more terrific guests for you today. I do hope you'll join in on social media and have a chat with me that way. I'll dispense all talk of the weather from here on in. Apparently, though, the final word on it is it's good right up until next week, so the weekend's going to be lovely. I'm consoling myself with the thought the weekend is going to be absolutely lovely. Welcome to the programme, then. Do chat with me, as I said, it's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Chat with me. Love to hear from you today.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
The indomitable, there's a word for you today, the indomitable Maria Heller joins the program live from Arizona. She'll be with me in 20 minutes or thereabouts. A terrific broadcaster is Maria. Don't need to tell you too much about her. And we will talk about the US response to the lockdown, of course, the latest from the United States. But we'll also talk, of course, about the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis on Monday. And that's making the news here in the UK as well. It might. We'll talk about that as well with Maria. And coming up then in the second hour, it's a return to the programme for Zed Phoenix. Now, he was on the programme with me about 5 or 6 weeks ago. He's a broadcaster and investigative journalist, making a series of YouTube videos recently about how Bill Gates infiltrated UK medicine, academia and everything else. He's been talking in recent days on his YouTube channel about the coming health passport, the digital health passport, and there's a lot wrong with that. So we'll talk to Zed Phoenix about that in the second hour. For more on him, govote.org.uk. He's the founder and CEO of govote.org.uk. And that's Wednesday. Yes, May 27th, summer is here. I know I said I wouldn't talk about the weather, so I won't anymore. Are you well? Good day today. A couple of interesting stories came across in the late afternoon. One of them was via RT. And it's not the first time we've seen this. The RT ran a story today with a lovely flyover, a park in Istanbul, which is in Turkey, in case you didn't know. And the park people there, or the local authority there, has covered the grass in white circles, painted circles onto the grass, you see, so people can sit within each ring and not be too close to those sitting in the other rings. Yeah, we saw that on the BBC a couple of weeks ago. This is your future. But also on the BBC today, a couple of stories which are related. One of them concerns a 5G mast that was set on fire even late last night in Mossley Hill, Liverpool. A 5G mast was damaged in an arson attack only days after it was erected. That's according to the BBC. Mossley Hill in Liverpool. People nearby said there was a loud bang. They saw flames and smoke coming from the base of the mast. The local fire service got involved. They said the fire was started deliberately. Attacks on 5G phone masts have been fueled, according to the BBC, by a conspiracy theory wrongly linking 5G and coronavirus. And the other story, which is of great interest to me today, is a feature on bbc.co.uk. So the BBC's website is bbc.co.uk. And they dropped a feature this afternoon entitled Coronavirus, the Human Cost of Virus Misinformation. And it's written by somebody called Mariana Spring. And she's described, wait till I tell you, she's described as specialist disinformation and social media reporter. Imagine that, Mariana Spring. She's their specialist disinformation and social media reporter. And the story is basically about, a BBC team that has been tracking coronavirus misinformation and has claimed today that coronavirus misinformation is linked to assault, to arson and to death. Okay? They talked to people who ended up in hospital, at death's door, you know, seriously ill, and those people said, we believed that coronavirus was a hoax and that the government was using it to distract us, so we didn't follow the rules and we ended up in hospital. God damn those internet conspiracy theorists. They also spoke to people who talked to them about arson, again on the 5G masts, and even assaults on hospital staff, apparently inspired by misinformation on social media. They talk about how some doctor and a nurse was accosted and physically assaulted by a man who saw a video on the internet claiming that the hospital involved was empty and not being used to treat coronavirus. So the upshot of it is that something is going to have to be done about misinformation on the internet. And that's of huge interest to me and you. I don't need to say any more on that. We'll talk about it as we go on. And here's a story in today's London Times, which I shared on social media this morning. It is related to the rollout of 5G. This, of course, a Chinese city of Hangzhou wants health surveillance after coronavirus pandemic. Now, this is where we talk about episodes of Black Mirror. This is where we talk about Twilight Zone, dystopia, Huxley and all of that. So a Chinese city that introduced electronic health monitoring during the COVID-19 epidemic has proposed to keep and expand the system after it's over. So after the pandemic or epidemic or whatever it is has gone away, Chinese city Hangzhou wants to keep the tracking measures. And one of these things is it wants to integrate electronic medical records of everybody's physical exam results, but also your lifestyle choices such as smoking, drinking and your exercise levels. Some Chinese men and women manage to complain about this on social media. They are absolutely irate that a system would be proposed to store all of their medical data, but also their lifestyle choices, whether they smoke, whether they have a few pints, whether they go for a walk or whether they don't. And the system, wait for it, would result in people being given colour-coded passes to keep with them at all times. Where if your pass was green, and of course this would be on your mobile device, if your pass was green, you could move around and go where you want. But if your pass was purple, you'd be sent back into quarantine. And a number of people have been talking for many years about such a scenario. And we'll talk to Zed Phoenix more about that in the second hour of the programme. And here's this horrible story coming out of Minneapolis, which is, well, you don't see too many more graphic bits of video on your news channel of choice on any day. Most people who've been watching the news today have seen a video in which a man called George Floyd is lying face down on the floor and a police officer is kneeling on his neck. In fact, he knelt on his neck for 9 minutes and effectively asphyxiated the man to death. Captured on video, crystal clear, of course. Smartphone videos now are amazing. The horrible plight of this man, George Floyd. It's made the news all over the world. The FBI in Minnesota have launched investigations into his death. The officer who knelt on his neck has been fired, as have three other officers there. His sister, his brother and his cousin have been talking to the media in the United States. It's fairly awful, this. Here's his family speaking to CNN a little earlier on.
I love my brother. Everybody loves my brother. Knowing my brother is to love my brother. They could have tased him. They could have maced him. Instead, they put their knee in his neck and just sat on him and didn't care at all. He screamed, "Mama, mama, I can't breathe. I can't breathe." And they just didn't care. So I just don't understand what more we got to go through in life, man. They didn't have to do that to him. He's a gentle giant. He don't hurt anybody. He give his last to anybody. They didn't care. They treated him worse than they treat animals. And I wouldn't have to like that. They took a life, now they deserve life. I don't feel sorry for them. They hurt me and they hurt my family. I can't take nothing back. I can't get my brother back. They at home, they sleep, they with their wives, they got kids. If something like that happened to them, they'd be just like me. I just don't know what's going on now.
So firing them is a good start, but we want to see justice for our family. And we want to see them charged. We want to have them arrested. They need to be charged with, because what they did was murder. And almost the whole world has witnessed that, because somebody was gracious enough to record it.
Yeah, she said somebody was gracious enough to record it. At what point do bystanders drop the cameras and defend the person being crushed to death under a big fat thug of a cop? When do you drop the camera and get involved? I'm not in any way trying to apportion blame to the person filming it. I know these days a lot of people understandably want to film their interactions with police officers for obvious reasons. But at what point do we have to drop cameras and rush the guy kneeling on his neck, even if it means putting your own safety in jeopardy, to try and help the guy who's basically been murdered in front of your eyes? We'll talk a little bit about that with Maria Heller. Some of you who have been with me long enough will remember a series of interviews I did with a former policewoman called Carol Horn. She was a Buffalo, New York police officer for some years. And back in 2008, she lost her job when she jumped on a fellow police officer who was strangling a man to death. She defended the suspect and prevented him from suffering serious injury or death. And eventually her own police department fired her for obstruction, even though the police officer that was carrying out the assault had previous, he'd even assaulted fellow police officers, and he'd been proven to have made false statements in the past. Why am I mentioning that? Because in the conversation I had with Carol Horn, she was on the programme 3 times, she said to me, she's a black woman, still fighting for her pension rights, by the way. She said to me, "Richie, when I went through the academy, we were told at the academy, if you see an officer fighting with or hitting or kicking a suspect, you're to join in." We'll talk more about that with Maria Heller in a few minutes' time. I didn't see Matt Hancock, the health secretary, do the coronavirus briefing last night. I didn't see it. But I know that in the briefing, he said that future flare-ups of coronavirus might lead to what he called localised lockdown measures. And they were fairly specific about that. So it could be in the future that they learn that in a certain part of your city or county or even your street, they learn that one or two people have the virus, they think it's risky, so they might instruct an immediate lockdown of a specific local area. Crazy, right? So this was announced by Matt Hancock last night. His colleague, the Housing Secretary Robert Jenrick, was on LBC this morning speaking with Nick Ferrari, who asked him about this. Robert Jenrick with Nick Ferrari.
I wonder if you can give us some background on a story that I'm sure you or some of your colleagues have made you aware of. Schools, hospitals, offices, and possibly housing estates. I stress that because you're a housing secretary. Housing estates could be subject to what are called local lockdowns under plans to contain any flare-up of the virus. How will that work, Secretary of State?
Well, the health secretary will be setting out more details shortly. But the idea is that if we can get our track, trace and isolate system up and running across the country, if there is a local flare-up in a particular community or somewhere that's even more micro than that, like a school, a workplace, a hospital, then we'll be able to ask those people who have come into close contact with the individuals who've got the virus to stay at home, to self-isolate for a short period of time. And by doing that, we'll be able to ease the lockdown for the rest of society. So there is a trade-off. It's placing restrictions on a small number of people, and we have to rely on people acting responsibly and the local council and others helping us to put those measures in place. But in return for that, millions of other people will be able to have greater freedom, more ability to go back to work, to school, to go about our daily lives as we all desperately want to do.
As we all desperately want to do. So ultimately, we will have to believe them when they tell us that there's been a flare-up in our neck of the woods, you know. There you are now in Salford, on your street. You've got to be, we've got to keep you indoors for a bit because we believe that there have been some cases of COVID on your street. So you've got to stay, you know, basically confined to your property for the next 2 weeks. I'm sorry, but that's the data we have. But who's going to check the data? Here's more of Jenrick. Ferrari quizzes him on the fact that this will, of course, disproportionately affect those of us who live in more built-up areas.
You're a balanced bloke. Do you not have concerns that this will be tougher for folk living on housing estates, typically because they live in more densely, more tighter circles than perhaps I do or other people do, those who live right on top of each other? It's unfair to them, isn't it, Mr. Secretary of State?
Well, it is going to be more difficult for those people who live or work in close proximity to others, absolutely. But as I say, what is the alternative? The alternative is for the whole of society to be locked down for a very long period of time. This is the way that internationally countries have been able to ease lockdown sustainably and safely. And so we, as you said earlier, want to have a world-class version of this system, because it is the only sustainable route for us to live with the virus.
It's the only sustainable route to live with the virus, to introduce a series of localised lockdown measures in the future, until God knows when. Spiros Skouras, who's a good mate and a great journalist, activistpost.com, he's been listening this afternoon. How you doing, Spiro? And he's been covering what's happened in Minneapolis as well, and he agrees that it's hard for him to watch the fact that people don't intervene. You know, why don't people intervene? There's a famous video. Now, I can't give you the exact key words to find it, but it's on YouTube. And it's a video of a man being arrested in London at a protest a few years ago. The guy hadn't done anything, I don't think, to warrant being arrested. But anyway, he was being arrested. And while he was lying face on the ground, immobilised, a London police officer stomped on the side of his face. And there was only a few police officers there, and there were thousands of people. And of course people started shouting, "That's bang out of order, mate, that's outrageous, you're an effing disgrace, you effing bully." But I'm thinking, make a citizen's arrest. Grab him. Don't beat him up, don't assault him, but grab him. And hold on to him and tell him I'm arresting you because you've committed a grievous assault there, a serious assault against a fellow citizen. So I'm not having it. Shocking stuff, this. No interest in it, Fox News, no interest in the alternative media. And I noticed this morning All Lives Matter was trending at the same time as Black Lives Matter. Identity politics, of course, reigns. I'm not going to get into any of that. It doesn't matter a damn to me, nor should it to you, what colour or creed the person is. But it must be acknowledged that black men and women are more likely to find themselves underneath 500 pounds of fat-arsed fucking cop struggling to breathe as their life basically drifts away from them. You're far more likely to find yourself in that situation if you're black, like it or lump it. It's a fact. It's a fact of life. It's something I've been covering for many years on many different programs. But ultimately, it's meant for everybody. You know, we talked about Posse Comitatus many times with the great Jim Mars, rest in peace, the hyper-militarization of the police, the hiring of thugs with low IQs, you know. I had an altercation a couple of days ago with a police officer. I didn't mention it because it wasn't very much. I was coming to the end of my run. I was very close to my home, and I saw a couple of police officers trying to enter a house in Salford, and they looked like Robocop. And they weren't executing a warrant. They weren't actually there to arrest somebody. They were there to question somebody. And they were decked out from top to toe in this black feckin' gear with all the Kevlar and all of that. And I said to them, are you not ashamed of your lives coming out dressed like that? And the answer, of course, is typical. Move on, sir, and mind your own business. I said, I won't move on. And I'm not interfering in your business. I'm asking you a question. What happened to the blue shirt and the tie and the hat? What happened to police by consent? When did you start turning into Robocop? Are you not embarrassed to be turning up at somebody's front door dressed like that? You look like a pair of thugs, I said to them. They just looked at me. Think I could read their minds. We'd love to bust this guy for something. I said, you're thugs, you know? You look like thugs. You don't look like police officers. You don't look like somebody who gives me a sense of, a sense of protection. A sense of everything's going to be all right. You look like thugs. It's coming here, you know. That famous line from that famous song, what was over there is now over here, eh? I'll be joined in 2 minutes' time by none other than Maria Heller, live from Arizona. It is Wednesday's Richie Allen Radio Show. Welcome to it. Yeah, we're cutting short a great song or a great tune. That's Warren Zevon, Werewolves of London on the Richie Allen Show. 26 and a half minutes past the hour. You know all about Maria Heller. Go to MeriaMeria.net. Wonderful broadcaster. Decades of experience in commercial radio. And it's got the oldest podcast on the net. It never ages. Great to be joined by Maria again. Welcome back, Maria. It feels like ages since we spoke last. How are you?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Richie? It's good to be back. Yes, I mean, every day seems like it's 100 days long.
Doesn't it? There's so much to talk about. We will obviously talk in a moment about what's going on with the virus and the lockdown in your state as much as your country. But I want to talk about this. It's a huge story. And we see videos from time to time of police brutality. And we see them. I said earlier on, I think it's pretty obvious. The brutality is disproportionately against African Americans, black men and women. But you don't often get to see a video as clear as the film that emerged out of Minneapolis on Tuesday, yesterday, it happened on Monday, of a man called George Floyd, whom was basically crushed to death by a police officer, despite basically saying, I'm dying, I can't breathe, I can't move. Other police officers stood by. I believe they've been fired. His family have spoken to the media today, hoping that they'll be charged with murder. You've seen this before, I'm guessing, but this particular video, because it's so graphic, is particularly shocking, isn't it?
It's disgusting, Richie. I mean, what people in America don't realize is that several years ago, the cops changed their motto from protect and serve to law enforcement. And they're trained that we are the enemy. And as far as the disproportionate amount of black Americans, I mean, this has been going on forever. You know, in the early days of my life, I remember the story with Rodney King. But what's interesting is, you know, just a week or two ago, we had a bunch of white men armed to the teeth, screaming and spitting in policemen's faces in Michigan because they didn't like social distancing, and not a thing was done. So yesterday, when hundreds of people came out to protest peacefully against this murder, the latest murder, the police used tear gas on them. So you see the racism in America. Remember, this country was founded on racism. And the police were founded years and years ago, basically to track runaway slaves. And nothing's changed as far as I'm concerned. I find it extremely disturbing and that nothing is ever done about it. And we have a president who in 2017 told the cops, don't be so easy on people you arrest. So he encourages the violence. So yeah, it's a very sick society we live in here.
I've had people on the program in the past, white Americans, and I know that they're not racist people. And they've said, they've expressed as much horror at the brutality as you have, justifiable horror. But at the same time, they've said to me, Richie, the brutality that we're seeing, everybody is experiencing this. It's just that a certain type of media, they say, like CNN, like NBC, like MSNBC, when it happens to a black man or woman and it's horrendous, it's picked up upon. It's not broadcast as much, or it doesn't make the news as much when it happens to another ethnic group. Now, before you answer that, I'm convinced the people who've said that to me are not racist. They genuinely believe that. They say that this brutality is not just exclusively reserved for black people. Everybody is getting it now. What do you say to that?
Well, listen, I always say what they do to one, eventually they come for all of us. But no, they're wrong. Okay, all they have to do is look at the disproportionate amount of black Americans that are in prison compared to white, the disproportionate amount of blacks that get convicted on marijuana charges compared to white. And these videos continue on and on. I posted one that happened 2 days ago of a 68-year-old black woman and her son who was shopping in a store, returning a TV. The cops assumed that they were stealing, threw the 68-year-old woman to the floor, her and her son, and began their usual treatment of shopping while black.
Yeah.
Then you had a couple of, what was it, last week, a week before, the jogger that was tracked down. He was hunted by three white men 2 months ago. And because they were connected to the district attorney, no charges were filed against them. Had the video of their hunt and murder of that black jogger not shown up or gone viral, they would have gotten away with that murder.
This we're so talking, that's, sorry to interrupt you, Maria, that's, I can't pronounce it, it's Ahmad or Ahmaud Arbery, right? That's the young man who was shot dead.
But, right, then you had the black nurse who was shot 8 times in her own apartment. With a no-knock warrant. I mean, this just continues to go on and on. You know, look at who is being released from prison because of the supposed COVID-19. Paul Manafort, Michael Cohen. What about all the black people? What about all the regular people who are in prison? Are they immune to the disease? So listen, in America, if you're white, you're born right. And if you're brown, you're born down. And
let me
if
ask
you're black,
you.
You got to step back. I mean, that's always been the case.
Let me ask you this. What's going on in police academies then? Because I refuse to believe that when men and women begin their basic training, however long it goes on for, I believe it takes a few months before you graduate, I just can't believe that at the academies around the United States of America, there is any encouragement towards this type of behavior. I can't imagine it for a minute. So
well,
what's
but you
happening?
Have to understand, a lot of people that go to those academies are KKK. All right, how many times do I see articles exposing, including this latest cop with his knee on Floyd's neck, wearing a Make America White Again hat? How many times do you see they go through their apartments and they find Klan sheets or memberships to the KKK? And I'm not saying all cops are bad. I'm certainly not saying. And listen, black cops abuse black people the same way. I think that, you know, cops have the same mentality today as somebody working in a slaughterhouse. They see us as the enemy. And don't forget, Richie, we started sending our police to Israel to be trained.
Yeah, that's right.
And, you know, under Obama, the militarization of the police, when he started giving them tanks and basically weapons of mass destruction, it took us 3 years of protest to stop that. Trump gets in, does the same thing.
Let me ask you this.
Now, they're afraid that we're going to have a civil war, so they're going to amp up their troops. But to me, the police, listen, they've always been corrupt as far as I know, because you know some of my earlier history.
Yeah, yeah.
If people paid attention to history, the single reason that Italian Americans that immigrated to America asked the mafia to come to America was to protect them from the police. And a lot of people don't know that. You know, they were getting shook down, you know, threatened, beat up, whatever, by the cops. So they knew they weren't going to get any justice in America. So they had to call on the mafia to come here and protect them.
And I know this to be true, and we've spoken about this before. One of the more intriguing interviews I've done in recent years was when I met the former Buffalo, New York police officer, Carriol Horn. Now, Carriol's a black woman. I sent her a message today, actually. She did a very extraordinarily brave thing back in 2008. She was working with a white police officer called Kwiev, I can't pronounce his name now, a Polish guy. And he's a thug, the guy. And he was choking a guy to death on duty. He was choking a suspect to death, and she jumped in and she had to attack her colleague to stop him from killing this guy. She did a very brave thing. She was fired for obstruction of justice. Would you believe that? Even though she was on duty. And unbelievable story.
If you're a good cop and you try to say anything, I mean, I'm sure everybody's seen the movie Serpico.
We've all seen. Now, let me just tell you what she said to me, which I think you'll find very interesting. So sure. To this day, she's still fighting for her pension from Buffalo Police Department and New York, the NYPD. Great lady and very brave. And I said to her, all the more intriguing because she's black. And I said to her, so at the academy then, you know, I want to know where this, if it does exist, this racism, because I don't know. I know you feel very strongly about it. I'm on the fence. I don't know yet. And I said to her, look, I said, what goes on there? And she said to me, rather than any racism, she said, the shocking thing for her during her basic training was that they very definitively stated to all the recruits, if one of your mates, one of your fellow officers, is fighting somebody, regardless of what the circumstances are, you get stuck in and put the boot in as well. That was undoubtedly the message when she did her training. She said it was thuggish. And I remember I said to her at the time, what did you think of that? You know, did you report that back then? And she said, well, who could I report it to? You know, I'm not a police officer. And she thought it was bravado. And I'm just wondering how much of that, because you've spoken to me, it was you who told me years ago that they were introducing hiring practices whereby they were finding people to send to the academies whose IQs were sub 100 or sub 90 and people who are more likely to be aggressive. So I'm wondering how much of it is institutional racism in people as opposed to they're just getting thugs in. And if you get thugs in, well, it's inevitable that black men and women will be the brunt of it, because if more police officers in uniform are white to begin with. So I'm just wondering. I'm not trying to be all things to everybody.
You don't even
I'm
just have
wondering.
To single them out. I mean, you can just look at our armed forces. You have the same racism in the armed forces. We had a graduating class that all, by the way, were taken, their graduation was taken away from them because they decided to post their graduation picture with the white power sign. And I've covered stories of women in the service, black women in the service, that one woman in particular, a story I'll never forget, that was murdered and raped and basically chopped up by her own troop. And the parents are still suing on that and trying to get justice for their daughter. Listen, there's very little justice in America for any of us, but there's even less
for
if
black
you're
people.
A minority.
So how before we talk about coronavirus, and I hope to God, if there is a God, that the men, I know we shouldn't, you know, nobody should judge anything. We weren't there, but look, the video is as clear as anything. You know,
right.
The guy...
Same as Eric Gardner, the guy who was selling loose cigarettes. That video went out. And even with the video proof, the cops were not arrested. They didn't suffer anything. They murdered him. He was the first one. Selling loose cigarettes on the street is now, was obviously a death sentence for him.
Yeah.
And even with the video, I mean, less than 3% of police are ever convicted.
And his mother has been on television today speaking about what's happened to George Floyd. Just before we talk about coronavirus, I'm not trying to be the devil's advocate here. I'm really trying to get to the bottom of it because I wonder, something else that you and me have chatted about over the years is the privatisation of your prison service and companies like the Corporations Correction of America, which have been given, states have handed their prison systems to these disgusting massive corporations. And incredibly, and some of our listeners won't believe this, but it's true, the Corporations Correction Company of America, the biggest manager of private prisons in the United States, they took over the running of prisons once they were guaranteed by the governors of those states. I'm right, aren't I? That the prisons...
Well, we call them prisons for profit.
Prisons for profit.
A lot of shows.
That's right, because...
And they demand a 90% occupancy from the government.
96% it is these days. You're spot on. So they said, we will run your prisons so long as you guarantee that you will keep them 96% full at all times. So here's my bloody long-winded question. So is that not possibly a reason for the brutality and the harassment of minorities? Because, you know, common sense to these corporations is, and to the people that they influence, that they're easier targets. It's easier to get them into prison because each prisoner is worth, I don't know, tens and tens of thousands of dollars a year to these corporations. Maybe that explains what's been happening to black people, at least in recent years. And it's not just as simple as saying that it's just racism. I'll get shot for saying that, but look, I'm saying
it anyway. It's racism and it's profit. Listen, in America, everything is for profit. We have medicine for profit. That's why our medical system sucks. This is why I think the coronavirus, in a lot of ways, is a blessing. Because people are realizing that they've been under the gun and under the finger of the rich for a very long time.
Yeah.
They're realizing as they lost their jobs, lost their health insurance, that they're screwed. They're realizing the need for universal health care. They're also realizing that they can do better on unemployment than the slave wages that they get paid to go to work. So this is showing, I think, every aspect of our system, when you have capitalism and everything is for profit, including your health, I think this is waking a lot of people up to and breaking them out of the illusion or the myth of American exceptionalism.
What do you think will happen? These guys have been fired. Do you think that'll be the end of it? Do you see charges for these guys?
I don't think it's enough. I think that they should be held in prison until their trial. And listen, since we have the fake Christians in office here, they should go by the Bible, which says eye for eye, tooth for tooth. And the same exact thing should be done to them if we're going to follow biblical law.
Yeah.
You know, biblical law only applies if you're a woman and you have a uterus. You know, choice only applies if you're a woman and you have a uterus. But men are protesting like psychopaths because they say it's their body, their choice, whether they want to wear a mask. Well, what if somebody regulated them like women's uteruses are regulated here? What would they do then?
What would they do? What's going on with this virus? I was quite sick earlier on in the year, January, February. We haven't spoken since then. You and I, you've been covering it day in, day out on your excellent program. Folks, if you haven't checked out Maria Heller, go to maria.net, subscribe to her and listen to her program. She has a treasure trove of guests from all walks of life, qualified men and women, talking about these issues. Fantastic, right? And my word is gold, by the way. I don't recommend very much. Remarkable. You know, you're a brilliant broadcaster. You know that. I don't always agree with you or you.
There's nary a day that I don't get a letter from a subscriber or a new subscriber to my show, and I keep it private that way to keep me from getting arrested, that I don't get a letter saying your archives are a treasure trove.
They are a treasure.
And I take pride in that because I've covered all these subjects. I've covered them ad nauseum, Richard. And, you know, you got 20 years of work there. But it's up to the individual. I can't force people to subscribe. I can't force people to do their own research, do your own homework. I can't force anybody to wake up. But I can just do what I know how to do. And I'm going to keep doing it until I can't.
Well, the thing about you as well is, sadly, so many of the people you spoke to in the early days are not with us. But it's great to have those interviews there archived so that those voices are still alive. I want to ask you then, what Maria, by the way, is going to stay with us till just after the top of the hour. Don't forget, we're going to be talking about the health passport, the imminent health passport here in the UK in hour two with Zed Phoenix. Before that, though, what do you think of this virus? What's going on, Maria? Give us your two cents. I'm having a pint of beer with you. We're having a beer in a bar. What's happening? What's really going on?
It's too early here for beer, but okay.
Yeah.
First of all, to think that this is some hoax, a Democratic hoax that took over the entire planet is ridiculous. My own opinion is I have multiple opinions. It's hard to get a handle on what's true and what isn't true. It's kind of like trying to take apart the Kennedy assassination. We might need 20 years from now to figure it out.
Yeah.
I think there's a really good chance that, and I know this might sound silly to some of your listeners, but I think there's a really good chance that it's the Earth itself revolting against us. She said, I've had enough. Okay. And of course, to quote the Zionist Rahm Emanuel, he said, never let a good crisis go to waste. So now you look at them putting in this police state around the world. I have never in my lifetime seen the entire world shut down, Richie, over any disease, okay? Not over AIDS, not over HIV, not over H1N1. So you have to look behind the curtain, and you see that the global economy was crashing and burning. So this was a gift. It doesn't even matter anymore where it came from. What you have to realize, and I say this to everybody in my own country, everybody capitulated without a shot being fired. All it took was a fear and a panic, and everybody looked to their governments to say, save us. And what's going to shake out after this is going to be something right out of that show, Black Mirror.
We're seeing it already, aren't we? We're seeing... I hate to admit this, but I'm one of my neighbors subscribed me to a phone application, and it's called Nextdoor. It's used all over the world. It's a way for neighbors to be neighborly. You know, they might say, "Oh, that Maria Heller, she's having too many barbecues, and we better have a word with her." That sort of stuff. Not really that sort of stuff, but just information, local information. Right. I might need
they
a gardener.
They have that here too.
They have that here too. I'm seeing things on there. Mm. I really am. People complaining about one another, complaining about neighbours' behaviour, and even going as far as to criticise neighbours for not coming out to stand like a fool by the side of the road and clap for the NHS on a Thursday night. People's behaviour. I could spend hours talking about that. You said, you put it brilliantly, they didn't even need to fire a gun. They didn't even need to point a gun.
No debate, no facts, nothing. Everybody just capitulated. And that's how easy. And that's just how easy it was to control everybody on planet Earth. So it's really scary. And when you look at all these apps now, you know, to tell if somebody you walk by on the street has the virus or report this person if they're not, you know, observing social media.
Yeah.
I think that one of the other goals of this is to make us afraid of other human beings, afraid to hug another human being for human contact, which, of course, we could then extrapolate into their goal of transhumanism.
You see that.
So, you know, maybe my mind thinks too deeply, but like I've said for my entire life, the only thing I trust governments to do is kill us all.
And to lie. What you said there about to distance us and to make us fear and even loathe human contact, I think that's very sharp. I think you're bang on the money there. I've got to get this in. I love you. And you might be right, but I don't buy this thing that it's Earth. And I'll tell you why I don't buy it. I'm not saying it's impossible. In fact, I think I do believe that if mankind was ever to really put the Earth in serious danger, I do think the Earth might sneeze and might fight back. And that's another story for another day. The reason I say that is a very well-known virologist and epidemiologist from Australia has broken cover today to say that, you know, all things considered, he believes the virus is manufactured. I'll tell you why I'm interested in that. Because that clown Fauci might very well be up to his neck in that, in terms of financing the development of viruses and vaccines in China. Stuff that when I heard it originally, I didn't think there was much substance to it. But now it looks like there's a paper trail there. And I just wonder, have you heard anything about that? And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, yeah, listen, that's another strong possibility. And I think that if it was engineered, just like anthrax being sent to Democrats after 9/11, and then it was tracked to Fort Detrick, Maryland, where they created the anthrax. And as soon as that was exposed, the anthrax went away. I think that if they did this, my sense is, like I told you, I'm at sea on this. There's so many ways you can look at this, Richie.
Too right.
I think that if they came out with this, I think it was meant to be like a designer disease. And I think they primarily want to just kill off old people. And then it jumped the gate. Okay.
See, that makes loads of sense to me now. What you've just said there.
Something else.
Yeah. What you've just said there makes an enormous amount of sense to me. That they thought, let's cull some older people. Let's get and I think they if that is the case and they did that to kill off older people, that by the way, that they've been demonizing now for years and years anyway, in the media, blaming senior citizens for everything, for every problem, right? I think they would have also thought, let's do all the things we wanted to do at the same time, the cashless society, distancing people.
Look at them moving now to digital currency. You know, here in my town, a lot of places won't take cash. And, you know, which is ludicrous if you think about it. But when I go to a coffee house with one of my friends and we talk to the kid who's maybe 18, taking our order and talking to him about, you know, this is bullshit that we can't pay in cash. Cash can be cleaned. And even the 18-year-old kid knows this is about moving us off cash into digital currency.
Yeah, yeah.
So they can track every dime we have, every dime we spend. So there's so many nefarious things that they are using this for, it's hard to pinpoint it.
Before, I mean, we've got another 10 or so minutes to chat. Thank heavens for that. Maria Heller is our guest, because I will be talking to Zed in hour two. This digital health passport, which they've proposed, not just here, but everywhere. The Chinese are way ahead of everybody. And it's really scary. In China, they want everybody to have it. And they want the digital health passport not only to store our entire medical history, Maria, but also our lifestyle choices, such as whether we smoke, we drink, or whether we take any exercise. Now, the only reason you would want to store that information is if you wanted to deny somebody some care in the future, or deny them right of movement here or there because of your bad behavior or your bad habits or whatever. I mean, this is proper Orwellian Huxley stuff, this, isn't it?
Absolutely. You saw they just did an entire global lockdown. Everybody, you see, even in Europe, all your countries were locked down. People couldn't travel from one country to another. You know, here in America, when they talked about the American Union or they talk about Trump's wall, people don't understand. This isn't to protect anybody. It's to lock you down in place. People are easier to control when they're herded together like cattle and have no way out.
And do you see in the near future the lockdown measures, which are in hand now? Because as you said, there has been zero opposition to it. Do you see in the near future lockdowns being introduced for different things, not necessarily health risks?
Well, yeah, I do. They'll come up with, you know, whatever excuses they want to. You know, listen, we can go back to the Boston bombings, okay, which cost my friend Dave McGowan his life. Good. He did a great job exposing the bullshit of the Boston bombings during that marathon. That was the very first time they tested shelter in place. That was the very first time they tested shutting off everybody's cell phones so they couldn't even take pictures of what was happening. These were all practice sessions, and while they were happening, I was telling people they're practicing for something bigger. And when this coronavirus started, I thought it was a practice, Now I'm not so sure it's a practice because they keep talking about the new norm, you know, the new society they're going to roll out, which, you know, I have to agree with David Icke, will probably be a version of the Hunger Games.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. I've read so many of these dystopian novels over the years, even going back to Stephen King's The Running Man, about the power of the networks, the TV companies. He's right, David, to say that. I have no doubt in my mind. I'm like you, I didn't see this coming. Well, you saw it coming, but I didn't see it happening so soon. And when this began, I thought this was some sort of drill for a couple of weeks. Right. Now I see what it is. What sort of impact do you think this is having on young minds, younger people whom are obviously, you know, children, the imagination of children? We know we used to be kids at one time. I know you've had, you have your own children, Maria. What effect will it be having on young children, all of this?
I think that everybody's got a form of PTSD right now. Lots of anxiety with children, especially. Look at these kids that just graduated. They're graduating school. They weren't even allowed to have graduation or prom, anything like that. And they're entering the worst job market ever. Young people are not stupid. Okay. They see what's going on with the environment. They see what's wrong with capitalism. You know, they're rejecting a lot of the systems put in place. But, you know, in a way, I feel really sorry for them because I can't even imagine what their future is going to be like.
Yeah, we've a situation now. I mean, none of our none of our major media networks, none of them are obviously talking about the after effect of this, which is the economic destruction. I mean, it'll be like nothing. It's one of the few things that I feel qualified to talk about openly and to say, look, this is not my opinion. This is fact. They haven't a clue, people, what's coming down the line. And you touched on something hugely important there. There will be no jobs. There are no jobs. One or two economists have managed to say on Sky News and the BBC in the last couple of days, many of those who are furloughed at the moment, getting paid to stay at home, will be horrified to find out in the next few weeks, in the next few months, that there is no job to return to. And not only that, but there's nothing else for you to do. I mean, this is horrendous.
Exactly. Well, they projected that 275,000 teachers in America have lost their jobs permanently because all the state money has gone to fight the virus. So, you know, it's just going to be, you know, a domino effect, which of course will work out for the technocrats who will just, you know, give us a stipend every month. And sit us in front of our computers and have us put these implants in our arms to prove we're virus-free or whatever other excuse they're going to use. And people have to wake up. You know, at the beginning of the year, we said this is 2020. 2020 is always referred to as having clear, perfect vision. So maybe we needed this for us to really open our eyes and see that the entire system sucks. I've been saying for years that the government here, probably the same in your country, needs an enema from top to bottom.
Yeah.
And this has shown the weakness of America in every aspect, from providing food for its people to, you know, drugs. You can't even get in to see a regular doctor all this time. Everybody that has other illnesses, what are they supposed to do? You know, I went to my doctor because I truly believe I have Trump anxiety disease. And I said to him, how many people have you seen from this corona, you know, this coronavirus? And my doctor said to me, Maria, very few cases in our whole county. He said, but I'm sad to say that I'm losing more of my patients to suicide.
To suicide? He said that to you?
Yes.
Oh, Jesus.
And when I posted that on Facebook, I got demonized and people screamed that my doctor wasn't worth two shits and all this stuff. He's like the nicest man you'll ever meet in the world. I've used him for 20 years. He was so sad. I mean, he was so downcast when he said that to me. But there are a lot of suicides going on. And I think that's going to get worse because you can't live on $1,200 for 10 weeks. Like Steve Mnuchin said, Americans can live for, you know, 10 weeks on $1,200.
Yeah.
You got to feed your family. There's nothing normal. You got a disruption in every area of your life. And of course, people are just going to say, you know, I'm going to take the easy way out like they did during the crash and you know, in the Great Depression. And there were plenty of suicides in George Bush's depression. But Wall Street's doing great. So I guess that's all that matters.
You're so right to mention the profoundly negative effect the lockdown is having on people's mental well-being. You're absolutely right to say that. I've seen it up close. I've seen it in extended family. I've seen it in friends. It's a terrible thing. It's not just the money, which of course is huge, but it's also that you can't go here, you can't go there, you can't go to the beach, you can't sit by a lake and breathe in the air.
You can't make plans.
You can't make plans. It's horrendous. I want to ask you in the last few minutes that we have, Netflix has released a documentary this afternoon on Jeffrey Epstein. It's been widely publicized, this documentary. It's called Filthy Rich. Will you watch? I'm sure you will watch it with some interest when you get a chance. Apparently,
well, I got a notice from Netflix this morning. As soon as I saw it, I threw it on my list and said, "Yeah, I'll be watching
it
tonight."
Which I'm going to do after the show. I'm going to have a very cold glass of cheap wine. Because I don't buy the good stuff. I've got a cheap glass of Pinot Grigio. But apparently one of the revelations in it, or one of the claims in it, and apparently the documentary makers believe the claim to be very credible, is that Bill, I didn't shag that woman, Clinton, was lying through his teeth when he said he never visited Pedophile Island. What do you think?
Of course he was there. He was there. His wife was there. Trump was there. Trump met his supposed wife, Melania, through Jeffrey Epstein. They all party together. I mean, I don't understand how people cannot know that. And even though, you know, years ago when I interviewed Roger Stone, he had written a book exposing the Clintons. He said to me that Trump indeed flew to Orgy Island but didn't partake. You know, come on. Why else would he go there when, you know, you can look up that he raped a 13-year-old girl while he was there and threatened the life of her family if she ever told.
Maria, I got locked into the Guinness factory in St. James's Gate in Dublin in 1998 overnight, and I never touched a drop of that Guinness. You can believe me.
Right. Believe
me, right?
That's like, I'm Italian and I've never eaten pasta in my life.
What will it mean, do you think? You've got this Maxwell woman who's still alive and well, by all accounts. I think, believe that Epstein was making movies about the rich and the powerful and blackmailing them and, you know, entrapping them by getting them to rape children. Is any of this ever going to come out now, or has it died with Epstein? And
because the news cycle changes like every minute. So people have short, you know, very short attention span.
Yeah.
I think it's equal now to the attention span of a goldfish, which is 7 seconds.
What did you just say
there?
I don't know that anything,
I have never seen any of these criminals really get prosecuted.
No, we saw it over here as well. There was great excitement when Jimmy Savile was denounced, sadly, after he died, the bastard, and we all got excited. But ultimately, this inquiry into child abuse here is going to end up nowhere. I hate to say that because I know there are victims who sometimes listen to programs like this. I know they listen to your program. I don't want to dishearten them, but these bastards never go away. They never get caught.
Well, people got to get that we live under the rule of the rich. No matter what country you're in, you're living under some form of a monarchy. The rich do not think like us. Many of them are sociopaths. We can't relate to that because we're normal. And, you know, the more money they have, the bigger their kicks have to be. And to these people, we're just useless feeders anyway. We're just here for their entertainment. And until people understand the message is survive in the book Survival of the Richest by Donald Jeffries, everyone should read it.
Great book.
They still won't understand who the enemy is. We keep attacking each other, but we're attacking the wrong people. We have to go after the plutocrats that run this planet.
Final question for you on that, because this has been my... This is what I have bored my listeners to death with for years, right? Ultimately, identity politics is now proven to have been the biggest tool in the arsenal of the elites. They've played us off against each other for years by making every one of us believe. Because I know that you properly despise the alternative right. And so do I, Maria. So do I. Because they don't give a shit about George Floyd, or they don't care about the jogger. We mentioned earlier on Ahmaud or Ahmad. But ultimately, they're not bad people. We've all been conditioned to see ourselves as the victim and to see everybody else as the enemy or the impediment to our success. We fell into the trap because we were brainwashed into doing that, when really, black, Hispanic, Latino, which is the same thing, Chinese, it doesn't matter a damn. If I ever agreed, and I do agree with David Icke on many, many, many things, and I always will, with one thing, we're here having some sort of experience. And what you look like, what church you go to, doesn't matter a damn. But somewhere along the line, the elite said, if we're to do what we want to do, we're going to have to keep these people killing one another and hating one another and blaming one another. And if we do that, well, we can't lose. Final word to you.
And they laugh all the way to the bank. Yeah. Listen, I don't know how old or young your listeners are, but if you've never heard the song Working Class Hero by John Lennon, go to YouTube, go to the one with the words, and he talks about how we are programmed from the minute we are born to basically step into a caste system. One of John's best songs ever.
Yeah, it's a great song. I'm not sure I can dig that out before the end of the program, but if I do dig it out, I'll close out with it later on. You can find Maria at her website, maria.net, M-E-R-I-A.net, and her wonderful array of guests on every subject you could care to think of, going back more than two decades. I recommend you subscribe to her and you listen to her interviews and her interviewees. It's top class broadcasting. Thanks for coming back today, and I can't wait to join you in a couple of weeks. I can't wait to join you in a couple of weeks to give you the blighty, as you say, the UK version of what's been going on.
Oh yeah, my listeners love us together, so that'll be great.
Thanks for coming back on today. Godspeed to you. Look after yourself, Maria. Bye for now. The brilliant Maria Heller, live on the line from Arizona on Wednesday's Richie Allen Radio Show. Just before I forget to mention, by the way, speaking of great people that I have a lot of time for, Kevin Myers, the Irish journalist and writer, will be on the programme with me tomorrow, giving us an Irish perspective on the lockdown. Great, great guy. He's been on the programme a couple of times. Wrongfully lost his job at the Sunday Times for a witty article he wrote about the BBC gender pay gap a couple of years ago. A great loss to Irish newspaper readers. But I'm looking forward to speaking to Kevin. He joins the programme tomorrow. Zed Phoenix will be with me in a couple of minutes' time. You don't want to miss that, because we're going to talk about digital health passports and all the rest of it. It's over to FSN for news headlines on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Back in 30 seconds.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Simon Marks. President Trump is threatening unspecified big action against Twitter after the social media company put a fact check warning on two of his postings. Two American astronauts head to the International Space Station later for the first time aboard a private rocket owned by Elon Musk's SpaceX. And surveyors working near Verona in Italy have discovered an ancient Roman mosaic floor beneath a vineyard.
Lovely, they found a floor beneath a vineyard. I couldn't give a shit, I don't know about you. Oh, there might be pictures of aliens on it, then it would be interesting. Right, we're going to take a very, very quick break. When we come back, it's over to Zed Phoenix, who's been making some fantastic, fantastic videos in recent weeks about where the paper trail leads in terms of COVID-19 in the UK, Bill Gates, and how Bill Gates has influenced academics, scientists, biologists, epidemiologists, politicians, and even the BBC in this country. We'll be talking about a digital health passport, which is common everywhere, and social crediting is coming with it, with Zed Phoenix very soon.
Renowned healer Mark Byerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Byerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbyerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Now, welcome back to the program. Just before we get Zed on, let's take another tune. Here's The Doors for you. Right, the old time is pressing, then it always is. It's exactly 12 minutes or thereabouts, 12 minutes past the hour. Wednesday's Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester. Scorchingly warm studio today. Now, my guest this hour was on the programme with me a few weeks ago. I was glad to hook up with him again. I'll put details out for his YouTube channel. He's gathering subscribers there at a pace, so he is. He's been looking into the COVID-19 lockdown, the search for a vaccine, but he's been doing great work on looking at the men and women, one man in particular, behind that and the nefarious influence that he has in this country. He is the founder and CEO of govote.org.uk. He's also a broadcaster, as I just said. Last time he was on, he did a brilliant job linking Bill Gates to, well, academia here, to UK medicine here, and the UK vaccine network. It was brilliant work. His YouTube work has gone from strength to strength since then, and in the last day or so, he's been talking about the introduction of a health passport here in the UK, and why he believes that ultimately it will be the introduction of mass surveillance, the keeping of every little bit of information on every man, woman and child in real time here in the UK. Delighted to welcome back to the programme, Zed Phoenix. Zed, thanks for coming back. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm really good, mate. Very good work. I sent you a Times article earlier on. I'm sure you saw it anyway. It seems like the Chinese, before we talk about what's happening here, they seem to be ahead of everybody. I mean, it's a startling thing for me to read that in any country in the world, they would say to people, we think it's right to keep your lifestyle choices on record and to issue you with a colour code, green if you're, you know, permitted to go anywhere, and different colours which maybe put different restrictions on your movements. I ask this to every guest. Can you believe we're living through this?
Well, unfortunately, yes, I can. This is something that's, has been in the making and coming for many, many years. Can I believe that actually doing it? I'm astonished, quite frankly, and I think a lot of people are. I just had a phone call this evening from a woman in complete distress over this whole thing, and all I can do is try and explain to them actually what I think is going on and try and make them feel a little bit better. But people are scared out there, Richie. They really are.
They're terrified, yeah. There's a lot to be said, actually, about hooking up with people who do have some semblance of understanding of how this has evolved. Because, right, it might still feel a bit hopeless, but at least you realise that you're not mad, you're not crazy, you don't have a tinfoil hat, this stuff is happening, and it can be very helpful. What's happening here in the UK? Thanks for making that video, by the way. I cross-referenced a lot of the stuff that you talked about in it, and you're bang on the money. The company involved, you give us the bare bones of it then. What's going to happen here with respect to digital health passports?
Okay, so what they're doing is they're introducing, as we know, the Track and Trace app. The Track and Trace app is so that if you go, say, down to your local supermarket someone in there thinks they have coronavirus or have tested positive for it, then anyone in a certain vicinity will get a text on their phone that will tell them to self-isolate for 14 days. And they've been preparing us for this for many months now. It's being trialled out in the Isle of Wight. I think the next area they're going to be doing en masse is Wales. But what comes along with the Track and Trace app is a passport. Now, we've been hearing a lot about these health passports, and I just wanted to know what it was about and how it was going to affect us. Because actually, what I was looking at was, as you know, was the vaccinations and just trying to make sure that, you know, we weren't forcibly vaccinated. Those who want it can have it, but those who don't have to. That's where we were at. So it turns out that actually what's worse than the vaccine is the health passport, because this is the grid. This is the control and surveillance grid that's coming in. And this is how it's going to work. So there's a company called VST Enterprises Limited, and they're a cybersecurity firm, and they have created the digital health passport. It's called the COVID pass, which I've sort of called the certificate of vaccination identification pass, which seems to stand for it. Anyway, what they do is they link with your phone. So when you go to the supermarket, you want to buy something, all you need to do is show the product with your phone, and you can buy it over your phone. So you don't have to touch it anymore. And then down with that is a third party application, which is their V-Health program, which is the passport. Now, this passport, as they have said, so if you're healthy, and it's green, so your phone will turn green, and then it will go amber and red. And red means that you have to go and see a physician to get it essentially turn green again. You have to go and see somebody. So one of the things that they use the health passport for are sort of private companies. Airlines will use it, so you won't be able to get on a plane. If you're amber or red, you won't be able to get a plane. Tickets, hotel chains, sports and leisure organizations. So we, you know, going to restaurants, going to the cinema now. This is what the health passport is all about. And obviously it's about returning to work as well. And it's also about being a guest. So if you check into a hotel, they're going to want to know that you're healthy. And why is this particularly bad? Well, it sounds kind of innocuous, and I get that. But what they're doing is, because of what you're buying, they can see in real time, by the way, this is a mammoth exercise that they've done. So they can see what you're buying and where you are in real time, because it's linked to your phone. So if you're unhealthy in any way, shape or form, or you're buying cigarettes or you're buying some unhealthy food, your phone assumably will go amber and go red. You'll have to go to the doctor. And instead of the doctor saying, do you smoke? They'll just be able to look down what you've bought. It's identified to you because you have a number. It's called the V code. And the V code is a set of numbers that's assigned to you in your phone. And if you don't have a phone, there's a fob system, and there's a lanyard that you'll wear around your neck with a printout of your V code, which I assume is going to be some sort of barcode type arrangement that can be scanned at the safe 2 meters distance. So in a nutshell, that is it. And so they will be tracking and tracing every single man, woman and child in this country. It will also say where you are on your vaccination schedule. So if you've been vaccinated, if you've not been vaccinated, if you are immune, whatever the treatment is and whatever treatment you're on, everybody who's involved in these programs. So that's all the blue light services. That's your doctor. That's anybody who is connected to this system, who is allowed to look at the data, can see everything about you. So, you know, as far as sort of privacy goes, this is the end of personal privacy as we know it.
And this company that you've been looking into, I know there are quite a few. There's one in Dublin, but this one is in Manchester. Yeah. It's up here. And I looked into this today. I looked at their website, but I also looked to see if there was much news coverage of it. And I was astonished that there isn't. I mean, you've put your report online about it. You've had thousands and thousands and thousands of views already. People are becoming aware of it. But apart from the Financial Times and apart from the New Yorker, and I believe the Daily Mail did something, but it was about football. Nobody in the country is talking about this. And my belief is that even if you mention this to people, they will have heard Boris Johnson talk about track and trace, and they will have heard all of these assurances that your privacy won't be imposed upon with all of this track and trace stuff. You needn't worry about it. It won't be shared with anybody. And you'll only ever be alerted if you've actually bumped into somebody that has the virus. Don't worry about that. That info won't be shared with anybody. But what I'm beginning to understand is there's two different things. There's the track and trace app that is being trialled on the Isle of Wight, and it's going to be trialled in Wales. That's completely different to the digital health passport. Completely different, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And except that once you accepted the track and trace app, you also accept all the third parties as well. Because don't forget, if you leave this country and you travel, say, to America, the technology has to link up and work in America as well, or wherever it is you go. So all these third party applications, so here it's this company in Manchester, there's a company in Dublin, there's companies all over the world that are developing, and it's all the same technology. It's exactly the same program that they're using.
The V-code, yeah, the V-code.
Yeah, that's right. So it has to all link up with these third parties. So once you accept the tracking app, you've actually accepted everything else that comes with it. And I've got a data guy looking into it to see whether it's an automatic update of your phone. In other words, you won't actually have to get the passport once you've accepted the track and trace. We're looking into the idea that actually it's an automatic update, which they believe at the moment it is, which actually is disgraceful because people need to know about this.
But they don't. And here's something else. These firms are talking about this new software, this V-code software, and they're talking about digital health passports. But here's something that's a bit sinister as well, or a little bit underhanded. They are talking, aren't they, Zed, in terms of that this is just about the COVID-19 pandemic or epidemic. But of course it isn't. But they're saying that it is. But of course this is meant to be forever, isn't it?
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, now we understand why this has happened, you know, because before, I mean, look, the British public have been absolutely amazing, haven't they? They've believed what their government has told them. They've gone into their homes. They've been under house arrest. I mean, if I had said that a year ago to people, they would have thought I was nuts.
Yeah.
So they're under house arrest. They've done as they're told. They're following the rules as best as they can. And then we learn that, you know, the narrative has changed over the time where we're going to be flooded with the NHS. That didn't happen. Everyone was going to get it. That didn't happen. Chris Whitty and the senior advisors now are saying that actually it's not as bad as we think, and actually most people haven't got it. AstraZeneca came out the other day and said actually the virus is burning off, and there's not enough virus people out there with the virus to test the vaccine.
Well said, by the way. Let me just double down on that. Well said. This was in the Times on Monday. They said the Times actually quoted the Oxford guys. Not AstraZeneca, but you're quite right. AstraZeneca and Oxford have combined on this. Great point you made there. They got 10,000 people to trial this vaccine that they want to rush out. And they had to admit on Monday that they can't find enough people to actually contract the virus. It's hilarious.
Yeah, but there you go. That's the truth of it coming out. And I think that guy was Adrian Hill, who's on the UK Vaccine Network, by the way. He's the one who was an ardent sort of discreditor of Bill Gates until he got £10 million from him. And then he was a supporter of him. Surprise, surprise. So this is what's happened. So the virus isn't as bad as we suspected. And it is disappearing. It is going out into the population and doing what these viruses do historically. And that is kind of burn themselves out eventually and go into the background.
We all build up antibodies. Now, I want you to take us through step by step. If you've just tuned in, it's 24 minutes past six. Zed Phoenix is back on the Richie Allen Radio Show, investigative journalist and broadcaster, and the man behind govote.org.uk. He's done great work, Zed. So I want you to go through this step by step then, because I always like to blame the listeners. I like to say that because some of my listeners, they struggle with this. It's me, really, but I blame it on the listeners. So let's just say, so digital health passport then, what does it mean? What information would be on my digital health passport? So what would be contained on that?
Everything about you. Everything. So you have all of your personal details will be on there. What car you drive, because that's also part of health as well. Where you go shopping, what you're buying, everything that you do digitally is going to be on the passport. That's the whole point of it. So if I wanted to say go down, I want to come up and see you, right? And I want to book into a B&B or a hotel. What I will do is I'll turn up at the hotel and they will see whether I've got a green health passport, i.e. has my phone turned green, and I'll check in, use my phone to check in with, right? If my phone is amber, that will have a set of restrictions. So I can only travel a certain distance from my home, or we need to know the detail of that, but we'll get there at some point. Or red, which is you're in lockdown at home. So that's what's going to be on it, everything about you. So you will only be able to do things if you've got a green passport. You want to go to the cinema, it's got to be green. You want to go out for a meal, you want to buy something at restaurants. And we've seen this now. Restaurants are getting geared up and they're getting told that they have to have somebody who is a COVID, sort of a coronavirus person who works in there. So if I worked in a bar, I might well have another duty of being the coronavirus person in the bar. In other words, making sure that everyone's healthy and stuff, who works there, et cetera, et cetera. And they're going to have access to this system. So everybody will be able to see who you are, what you're buying, where you are. If the doctor says, how many units of alcohol are you drinking a week, and you lie, they will see immediately that how many alcohol units you're drinking.
Now, let me interrupt you there, let me interrupt you there. You say that if the... And before I do ask you to clarify that, what Zed is saying is, right, this digital passport, digital health passport would be contained on your phone and it could be read by all of these third parties that Zed has outlined there, no doubt about all of that. This is where I get a bit confused. How could the information, such as information as to how many whiskies I had in a bar, be on there unless I inputted it into the app myself?
Yeah, because this is about purchasing. So what technology you get with the V-Code Health is also the latest in purchasing applications.
Using your phone to purchase.
That's right, yeah. So when you're in a bar, you won't use cash anymore. They'll want you to use your phone. In actual fact, in B&Q, there's announcements going over the tannoy. I'm going to try and record it and put it into a video, where they're saying, well, if you use the track and trace app, you can buy things over the phone and you don't have to go to the checkout. That's how it's being done. So it's all, everything's being bought over your phone. There'll also be a fob for people who don't have phones and a lanyard that you'll wear around your neck.
Very, very good. I wasn't trying to catch you out. That's very good, because contactless payments are so 5 years ago now, aren't they? I say this because everywhere I go these days, increasingly, I was in a supermarket in Salford the other morning, and bit of a queue, obviously, all that nonsense, the distancing, and more than a few people actually touched their phone to a square thing that was on the actually right near the little machine that you would normally put your card into. There was a little device and they touched their phone to it. So they want us to increasingly do that, and then there won't be any getting away from what you bought, what you didn't buy, how many drinks you had. So are you saying then that it's entirely feasible that in the near future certain places won't let you in, because we're basically talking about social crediting here as well, aren't we? I'm sorry, Mr. Phoenix, you can't come in because, you're a bit fond of the drink.
Yeah, that's right. Or you smoke or whatever it is. Yes, that's exactly the situation that we're envisioning for this. I'm happy to be wrong as always, Richie. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I really am. No one wants to be right over this stuff. But from what they are saying, what these companies are saying, that's exactly what's going to be happening. So I might turn up to the bar, but if my doctor thinks that actually I need a rest from drink for a week, my phone will turn red and I won't be able to get served because I won't be able to pay for anything.
This is horrifying. I mean, this is real Tales of the Unexpected, Black Mirror stuff, Twilight Zone stuff. We used to laugh at these dystopian science fiction things. Not laugh, but we would marvel at them and wonder at them. Imagine if life was like that. And here we are now talking about the possibility that you might get turned away from your cinema because of some reason, because you're not healthy. This might be a scary movie. It might be a very, high-octane action movie, and we believe that your heart is not up to it. We don't need that. We don't need you getting ill in the cinema so you can't come in. This is mad stuff, Zed.
Yeah, and that's exactly right as well. Or on the, conversely, they might say, well, you can only go to the leisure centre and do swimming. All the other activities are off bounds to you. So they might use it like that, which is depending on how the medical profession use this, really. But that's not down to you. That's down to somebody else deciding how you're going to live your life and what you're and taking choice away from you.
Do you? I imagine when you were looking into this company based in Manchester, I imagine you bent over backwards looking for links to the usual suspects. I did today, but I didn't have a lot of time to do it. I couldn't make direct links. I'm obviously talking about Gates and his cronies. So these companies that are developing this stuff, I don't want to be one of those presenters that does, the wrong thing. I can't say for sure, but I've got to suspect that there must be some involvement somewhere.
Oh, well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, this company on its own website says that... hold on a second. Let me just get the piece of paper.
You're going to embarrass me now if it's on their own bloody website and I didn't see it today because
It is on their website, but it's not naming names. It says here, VST are currently using the underlying technology V-Code and V-Platform. V-Platforms, they're selling, buying and selling stuff as part of their contracted work with the United Nations as part of their Sustainable Development Goals program. So you've got the United Nations, you've got the World Health Organization, you've got the World Bank. These are all part of the same thing. And all the cabal that go along with that, so the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation all funnel into that and they funnel back. You've got the Bill and Melinda Gates Trust, which not a lot of people know about, but that's how Bill Gates makes extraordinary amounts of money through his foundation. So the foundation is philanthropy, but his trust is there to make money. And he claims himself that he gets a 20-to-1 return on his investments. That's how much money that he's expecting to make from all of this. And obviously all the sort of other people and other organisations that they've set up in the racket.
You mentioned UN and sustainable development. Of course, this is a beautiful development for those forcing this climate change fiasco on us and telling us that we must change our lives, that we can't use... In the future, we can't have the radiators turned on above 18 degrees in the winter, that we shouldn't eat so much red meat. This will be absolutely perfect, won't it? This system.
Yeah, this is part of their plan. This has always been part of their plan. I remember reading things from the Rockefeller Institute years ago, and there was a document, I think in the early 90s, called Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars, which was essentially about how all this was going to be a fingerprintless crime on humanity. And we didn't kind of believe it, really. We just thought that it was them, putting stuff out there to confuse us, distract us, all this kind of stuff. Some of it was reported on. Some of it then started to happen. But because of this coronavirus and how it's gone around the world and how it's happened, that this is the perfect excuse to implement it all. And they have gone at speed to do that. And that's why we can't really catch up. As many people as I'm talking to and as we're talking to now, they are implementing their plans all the time. And it's a simple matter of trying to get the information out to people, do it in a calmish way. I know I wasn't very calm when I made that video the other day because I was in shock, which happens, because I, didn't believe it. And it took me quite a while to get my head around it as well. But then deliver the information to people in a way that they can understand. And, information is protection, isn't it? And especially now.
Especially now. Sean Hinchcliffe asks a good question. What happens to people who don't have a phone? My guess would be before Zed answers, that is. It'll be coercion again, won't it? It'll be a case of, well, I'm sorry, mate, but this is the way it is. You need to have the phone and you need to have the passport and go and get a phone. And presumably they'll make smartphones or basic ones cheap enough to the point where people can get them anyway.
Yeah, maybe. But there's a fob.
And the fob you mentioned, and the lanyard, yeah, you mentioned
that. And the lanyard, yeah. So those are for people essentially of a certain age, let's say, who don't deal very well with technology. I mean, as far as I can see, they're not really interested in us. They know we're going to kick and scream about this. They know that we're going to resist this with all our might. They're interested in the five-year-olds who are going to grow up into this system. They won't know any different.
Let me very quickly recap what you've heard Zed Phoenix talk about there. If I get anything wrong, jump in. I'll be very quick, Zed. Zed's been looking into companies in this country that are developing a digital health passport, which would sit on your phone. And it's sinister in the extreme. everything, every bit of information that exists about you would be contained on your digital health passport, everything. Zed explained incredibly well that it wouldn't just be your medical information, your medical data, but it would also be not only your movements, but your purchases in shops and in bars and in businesses, your interactions with other people. All of this would be kept on there. And these devices then will be read and could be read by anybody. It could be read by venues, sports, the theatre, music venues, restaurants. And you might be declined. Zed described how the passport has, I think you said green, amber and red, didn't you, Zed? If it's amber, yeah. If it's red, for example, the venue that you might be trying to access would be compelled to say, no, you can't come in today. You know, your doctor could put some information on your digital health passport that would mean that a third party could say, well, sorry, you can't come in here today. Your doctor has said this or said that or the other. It is beyond terrifying, this. And all over the world, these companies are using this software called V-Code to make this a real possibility. And it's not just on phones, as Zed told us. It's on fobs as well, and on the things you hang around your neck, lanyards. And I believe, and I could be wrong, that you won't really be able to function without a phone, fob or lanyard. It'll just become impossible. And that's coercion rather than, you know, kind of insisting that you have it. And we talked about this a few weeks back when we talked about the vaccines as well. Coercion, Zed, it's a big thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, don't forget, it's about putting people into lockdown. So we've all experienced now what they call lockdown, which is house arrest. We've all experienced that now for, 12 weeks, whatever it is. So this is the way they can ease restrictions. So everyone on the surface will think, oh, great, I can go out and go about my business. I'll be careful. I'll follow the rules as best I can. But actually, what these things will do on your phone is if it turns red, you'll be in lockdown again because you've passed somebody, you know, with a coronavirus or who thinks they have a coronavirus. Because actually, when you look at their video, when you fill out the some of the information straight away, it says, do you think that you might have the symptoms? And you say, oh, yeah. So all those people, and I know quite a few people who thought they might have symptoms already, will put that in. And of course, as soon as you pass them in the supermarket or on the street, you don't need to know them. They'll just walk past you. Of course, it will affect your phone. First, you'll get a text, which is the track and trace, which will tell you you've been in the vicinity of someone, you need to self-isolate, or you've been in the vicinity of someone who's been tested and they have coronavirus and you need to self-isolate. And of course, what we've seen is that social services are also involved, because once you've got the text, you'll also get a phone call to see that you're actually complying, and that's being done then through social services. And that's happening all over the world, not just here as well.
Not just here. And the lockdown affecting people in such a very negative way psychologically, Zed, you would imagine that if they said to people, imagine they said to people this coming autumn, because I could see something in autumn. I could see them saying, look, we've got this thing, it's brilliant. Digital health passports ready to go. The lockdown is upsetting people to the point, not just financially, but medically. Come on, Zed, they'll beg for the thing, won't they? They'll beg.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And kids as well. They'll think it's so cool to be able to, you know, buy stuff with their phone, not have to go to the till, walk straight out of the shop. I mean, yeah, and people will beg for it. My neighbours will beg for it. They won't go anywhere without a vaccine. They've already said that. A number of people have said that. So these health passports, you don't have to sell this to people. They'll just accept it. And once you accept this tyranny, because this is what it is, it's tyranny, you'll never get rid of it. I promise you that. It will just keep getting worse and worse and worse.
It'll never end. A couple of things I noticed on the V-Health website today, they've already developed contingencies for people who might try to interfere with it. So I know you're very savvy, Zed, so if it was foisted on you, I know you wouldn't take it, but if it was foisted on you, you might be able to find a way around to changing your information, to make your information different, to keep some privacy, but also to keep yourself in the green. But they've even got contingencies for all of that, I see. It's rotten. They know how rotten it is. So they're really concerned about people trying to get around it. I saw that on their website.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, I always follow the law. I'm a law-abiding citizen. I don't go out my way to break the law. I've, you know, followed the rules as best I can for lockdown. I've stayed in. Me and my partner share shopping duties and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, we're doing our best along with everybody else. And, you know, but one of the things that kind of we've seen here is that essentially, I mean, if you go to other countries, perhaps, you might be able to, it could be, you know, people might be able to bribe people to change their information in other countries and things like that. You know, there's a whole heap of things where it calls it into question. So, you know, and I'm sure things will turn up on the black market that will be all be about get around the COVID pass and all this kind of stuff. Do you know what I mean? Crazy. It is just insane.
It's insane. Yeah. Jean Ann often mentioned, great help to me on the show. Great journalist and more besides. She says even blackmail, it's wide open to blackmail, this thing, isn't it? Wide open to it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, and this is why, you know, Matt Hancock and the rest of them, you know, they keep slipping it into conversations. You know, the health passport. People have no idea what they are going to be accepting. And so as soon as I found out, I wanted to make that video. It took me about 6 or 7 attempts to make it because I was so angry, really, and so frustrated with it. So this is where they're going. This is what they're doing. And it is. Insidious, and you know, you'll never get rid of them once you accept it. I mean, I keep my phone in the microwave. I know it sounds silly, but microwaves are really great for keeping radiation in and stopping radiation from coming out. So I use my phone when I need to, and then at night it goes back in the microwave because I don't want updates and I don't want things like that. And I can see people doing that, really, you know, with this COVID pass.
I hope so, Zed. Yeah. I hope so. Here's the $64,000 question. Will the advent of the ridiculously fast and data storing, data transferring 5G be a big help to this digital passport thing? Is there a link there?
This is why they're doing 5G. This is what it was all about all the time. This does not work. The health passports do not work without 5G. They'll work to a certain degree. You know, the track and trace app works to a certain degree. But in real time, they need 5G, which is why there's a rush to roll out 5G all over the world, because they've got to have it for the track and trace and for the health passports to work in real time.
This is fascinating to me now, because I without having the technical knowledge of it, because I've listened to others who do, I believe you are right. But at the same time, despite there seemingly being a lot of 5G installation kind of activity going on during the lockdown, it still seems that they seem to be way behind on getting their masts up all over the place, because there are so many places. Friends of mine live in, even me here in Salford, there is a mast the other side of Buell Hill Park. There's none near me, and I'm just wondering, are they behind on that? I'd love to know that. How's that progressing, you know?
Well, I think they are behind on it, because there's a few arguments going on with councils at the moment, because, you know, they wanted 5G antennas on all the lampposts.
That's
well,
right.
Councils are saying, essentially, who's going to get the money from the rent from the phone companies? And so that's in the court at the moment. And from what I understand from the lawyers doing that, that could be in there for years and years to come. So they're arguing over who's going to have the money from the 5G, you know, and all that kind of stuff, from the lampposts and all this kind of stuff. You know, where I live, I'm very lucky. I live on a nature reserve in the middle of nowhere. We've got an antenna about a half a mile away, a bit more than that, actually, I should say. And there's nothing else. So, you know, I think they're massively behind on this. And obviously, that's a good thing. But obviously, it doesn't stop them rolling it out, and it just works over the internet as
wow.
You have it.
So 5G then, which of course is, everybody thinks speed, everybody thinks downloading a 2 gigabit HD plus film in a few seconds. We think that's a tiny part of it. It's actually about data transfer and enormous amounts of data. So just to go back to 5G, you mentioned earlier on something very important, and one of our listeners, Cave Hillbilly, I love the names, Cave Hillbilly, on Twitter, he's cracked onto this. He says, why does it need to happen in real time? Isn't 4G adequate for quick background checks? Yes, it is. But he's gotten it, I think, in one with real time. If they want data moving backwards and forwards, data that they can access for everybody in the country in real time. Well, they couldn't do that on 4G, hence the 5G, and hence you saying to me that you believe that this is the real reason for 5G to begin with.
Yeah, and I believe that. Yeah, I mean, so for example, it has to be in real time eventually, because then you can control everybody. So for example, me, you know, I do a video they don't like, they can turn my phone off. Okay, that's one thing. However, I might be coming up to Manchester to see you. So what they do is I potter about in the morning at the shops and what have you. I come back to my house, I set off to go up to Manchester, and suddenly my phone turns red and I can't go and buy petrol in the petrol station.
Yeah.
Because they know where I'm going, you know, and all that kind of thing. So it makes me go home, you know.
And you'd have to turn about and go home. John tweets, this might be the weak link even. If they can convince people to be afraid of a low-consequence virus, they might also be very afraid of carcinogenic microwaves, says John. I'd like to agree with John, but we've found it, those of us in the independent media, and I don't like to call myself a researcher, I'm a presenter and a journalist, but I've tried to get it through to people, even on commercial radio programs, on commercial stations over the years, the dangers of non-ionizing radiation, microwave radiation. And you know what, Zed? I found it impossible. Even when I've brought people on that used to work for Nokia and Siemens and all these big companies, people just, their eyes go blank when you tell them that holding that bloody thing to the side of your head might be a death sentence. Don't be stupid. Take it out of your pocket. It's affecting your bloody seam and it's affecting your health. You can't get it through to people.
No, because human beings are visual, yeah? So if you can't see it, smell it or touch it, it does not exist. And that's the insidious nature of all of this. And that's what they're relying on, really. So people say, oh, well, it's all right. I don't feel anything. Well, yeah, it's cumulative, isn't it? But if you read the instructions of your phone, it's in there. If you go to you get your instructions for your microwave, it says you have to stand X amount of feet away from your microwave when your microwave is
on.
That's
right.
Yeah, there's a guy in Lanzarote, right? He was a chef. And I quite like this story because it demonstrates what people are like. And he had industrial microwaves. And he decided to make service faster, he would take the doors off his microwaves. And obviously, once you do that, you have to kind of jimmy it to make sure that the microwave will still work, because these are professional chef's microwaves. So anyway, he did that. And within 8 weeks, he was dead. And the rest of the staff in the restaurant, which was quite a big restaurant, all had were very, very sick. They had cancers. It was dreadful. And that was all because some guy decided to take the doors off his microwave.
Is that right? Wow.
That's right, yeah. And that was in the mainstream news.
That made the news. It's on the record. Number of people, including, again, the aforementioned Jean Anne, said maybe with the way things are going, 5G only needs some masts maybe sporadically placed, because she makes a very good point here. What about all the new satellites littering the sky? Has that anything to do with it? Well, it does, doesn't it? We've heard of the space fence. They are putting satellites in to orbit that are specifically there to boost the signal. I think I'm right in saying that.
Yeah, I think you are. Yeah, I've looked into it a little bit. I'm not an expert on it by any means. That's all coming sort of down the line. But this is all part and parcel of the grid. So when you have a grid, you have to have a grid. So you need the satellites, you need the boots on the ground people, you need the infrastructure going in there, and you need people with the phones. So you can see, going way back, the introduction of the mobile phone, you know, and all those things in the 80s with the brick phone and all this kind of stuff. They had this plan in mind then, because they had to get everybody into the phone. Star Trek using the communicator was
that?
All getting you kind of wanting to use a phone, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I remember the excitement in the mid to late 90s when the things got a bit smaller and all of a sudden they were affordable. And my mother came to me, it must have been 97 or 98, and she came to me with a packaged up in a box small Motorola phone. I was delighted. I was the bee's knees running around with it. Yeah, because of the science fiction films and all the rest of it. And now they're almost like an extendable part of the human body. It's disgusting, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But this is the plan, and this was always the plan. And they have rolled it out, and we have accepted it. Because you know what? I think human beings are really kind people by nature. They're not violent. They're not aggressive in any way. And they don't believe that they are being lied to when they're being lied to. You know, and we're all, I think, a little naive. And I think if anything good comes out of this time, you know, I think it's going to be that we're certainly at a crossroads. We need to take responsibility for ourselves. We also all need to, on this issue and all the other issues to do with the coronavirus, we all just need to start working together. You know, I hear so many people say, oh, I don't like them. I'm not going to talk to them. And I don't care. This is so serious.
Yeah,
this involves all of us. You know, if we start working together, we have a chance of slowing this down and stopping it. If we don't, it won't.
A very good point you made there. I've noticed in recent weeks, I mean, because of some of the guests I've interviewed in the past, I found some academics don't want to get involved with the programme because they've seen the national media has criticised me for interviewing certain people. It doesn't matter that I didn't agree with them, that I argued with them and all the rest of it. But anyway, but I'm finding that's kind of going by the wayside now because people are starting to see that, wow, these are some rotten times now. That it is happening, that this isn't a joke, and those fears of, you know, fears of association, I think are starting to fall away now, which is no bad thing. And also some of those academics are horrified, Zed, because they expected to be speaking on BBC Breakfast or they expected to be speaking to Channel 4 News, but they can't get arrested now, let alone get invited onto a programme. So, and listen, I'm not mocking them. So now they're saying, right, there is a need for these independent media content creators and journalists like yourself and others. I better start talking to them then because, well, nobody else is talking to me. So that's a, I know you were making a broader point than that. I know that, but that's important. Folks, if you haven't checked out Zed's YouTube channel, you need only put in Zed Phoenix and you'll find it. Govote.org.uk is the website. He's the founder and CEO of that. And he's a broadcaster and a journalist, investigative journalist. And the series of videos and reports that he's done on YouTube since the lockdown, particularly since the lockdown, I would say, are outstanding. And don't worry about sharing them because a lot of fact checking has been done by himself. I fact checked nearly everything that he has said before he came on today, and it all stands up. It's hugely important. So I just want to thank you for coming back on. And if you want the final word, my friend, you can have it now. Thanks for coming back on. Final word.
Okay. Look, the main thing is let's all understand what this is about, what the track and trace is about, and what the health passports are about. And, you know, I wouldn't accept it. I don't think anybody should really be accepting this thing. We all need to work together. We all need to start communicating. There is many people in our society who have no idea about this and they're scared. And I think we just need to, you know, come together and start educating people and talking calmly about this to them and giving them the reasons as to why this shouldn't be. And also putting pressure on the government, which is what we're doing with Go Vote and lots of and many other people as well. And making sure that the government is held to account because the media aren't doing it. And we're speaking to media every day now. They're concerned, but it's too late. It's rolling out. So let's all just do our best to try and stop this. I think this is the danger of our time, these V-Health passports. And this is the track and trace and surveillance of every man, woman and child in this country. In fact, on the planet, if they roll it out. So this is something that needs to be stopped.
Zed, thanks for coming back today. Loved having you back.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Not at all, and I know we'll do it again real soon. Cheers, Zed. So do go to youtube.com and subscribe to Zed Phoenix. He's on Twitter as well. And as I mentioned, govote.org.uk is the website. This is hugely important information. It's massive. The company that's based here in Manchester, I knew very little about it. I mean, I knew it existed. Lucky enough to know a very good friend of mine, Michael, who's been mentioned on this program before, works in security for Manchester University. And he's told me about certain companies that operate in the city with connections to the university and whatnot. And that, but I didn't realize what was going on up here. They've basically got it ready to go now. Not just that company, companies all over the world. A digital health passport that will sit on your phone or on a fob that you would carry which obviously would be connective to Wi-Fi and 5G, or a lanyard thing that you would hang around your neck, like those things you hang around your neck to access buildings that you might work in. And every single thing about you would be contained on that. But not only that, your movements, who you speak with and maybe who you don't speak with, what you do, where you go, what you buy, what you consume, all there. One of the things we discussed, and it makes perfect sense to me, as they talk about more localized lockdowns in the future and second waves of the epidemic, which isn't an epidemic at all, which isn't killing anybody really. They talk about this, and of course it's destroyed people. It's destroyed them financially. Economically, it's destroyed them. It's destroying their relationships. It's hurting them psychologically. It's having a devastating effect on people. And they're fed up of it. And offer them the way out and say to them, this is the way out. A digital health passport. If you accept that from now on, you can't go here, there or everywhere unless your vaccinations are up to date, unless your doctor has uploaded information to your digital health passport that means you are pre-approved to do exercise A, B, C or D. People will have this, you know. They'll have it. Of course they'll have it. Because anything is better than this bastarding lockdown for people. So that's where we are. I want to thank Zed Phoenix for coming back on. And as I mentioned earlier on, the indomitable Maria Heller, amazing lady, maria.net. If you haven't checked her out before, do. Amazing array of guests going back over two decades, all archived there, including the wonderful Dave McGowan, whom she mentioned earlier on, who is no longer with us and whom I knew all about but never had the pleasure of speaking with. So do check her out. I'll be back with you tomorrow, Thursday. It's been a sweltering old day here, but it's not been too bad in studio. In studio. One of the guests tomorrow will be Kevin Myers, brilliant Irish writer and thinker. We need a few more thinkers, don't we? We need a few more thinkers. People who have got the balls. Like Peter Ebdon last night. Like Simon Dolan. People who have got the courage to break through the shackles of the court of public opinion and not care anymore what people think and say, I'll say what I have to say and I'll pass on what I think, my truth, my evidence. We need more thinkers in the world. Kevin Myers is certainly a thinker and he'll be on the programme with me tomorrow. Closing out the programme with Rod Stewart today. My better half loves this song, so I'm playing this for her. It's not the done thing on radio, you know. But I'm doing it anyway. Speak to you tomorrow. Look after yourselves and one another. Have a great rest of your Wednesday until Thursday's programme. Bye-bye.